Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Guy Geesh with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR, Revenue Marketer Radio. Every Thursday at 1 o'clock, we meet to talk to a real revenue marketer and learn their tips and tricks on how they've made that transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. Before I introduce today's guest, I'd like to take a moment, again, just to define the term revenue marketer and what revenue marketing is all about. And basically, a revenue marketer are those marketers who have revenue or revenue-related accountability through the kinds of campaigns, communications, and digital interactions they set up. Everybody that we interview on this radio show is responsible for the top of the sales funnel and for interacting with and nurturing leads until they're sales ready. And they all use some type of marketing automation platform integrated with CRM to power their revenue marketing practice so they can be sure to get that revenue result. The other great thing I like about the show is that every single revenue marketer on the show began exactly where you are today, and they're here just to share their journeys, their successes, and also their gotchas so that your journey to becoming an elite revenue marketer will be quicker and a whole lot smoother. I have to tell you, I am so delighted to have today's guest, Dave Correll. Dave and I actually met in a very happy set of circumstances. We were both part of Marketo's Revenue Rockstar Roadshow, and he was presenting his case study. And I'm sitting there listening to him thinking, oh, my gosh, I have to get this guy on the radio show because his lessons learned and the story of his journey is just so completely compelling. So let me give you a little introduction to David, and then we're going to get going. He's currently the Vice President of Marketing at Bizzo. Oh, my gosh, Dave, I hope I pronounced that right. Did I pronounce it right?
That's right.
Bizzo. Oh, gosh, okay. I usually catch these things in advance. But he leads their marketing efforts, and he's absolutely no stranger to B2B marketing. He joined the company with more than 15 years of B2B marketing, business development, and sales experience, and most recently served as Vice President of Product Marketing at SuccessFactors and has held positions at Instill, Siebel Systems, Thompson Japan, MBA Vision, which he also founded. He currently lives in the San Francisco Bay Area with his wife and two lovely daughters who are 4 and 6. That's Natalie and Abigail. And so, Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
It's such a pleasure. I have to tell you, I really loved your case study so much when we met at the roadshow with Marketo. But why don't we start by you tell us a little bit about Bizzo and kind of a little bit more about what your role there is.
Sure. Sure. So Bizzo, you know, we're helping marketers, like many of the folks on the call today, to reach very specific business audiences online. You know, we have it always helps to, when I tell you about my journey to build a marketing engine, just have some context for kind of the business and what we're setting out to do. We have what we call a business audience marketing platform. So essentially, we're helping marketers to put their brands, their message, their display advertisements in front of very specific segments of business professionals online. And we also do things like give marketers a very clear snapshot of the business demographic makeup of folks visiting their websites. So that's kind of what we do. The company itself, you know, the company itself is a little bit early in its journey, founded a little over 3 or 4 years ago, but we're going through some really rapid growth. Business has grown quickly. We grew almost 300% year over year last year.
Oh, that's absolutely awesome. I don't think many people can say that. That's incredible. Congratulations, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you. And I think when I kind of talk where I plug in, you know, it sets a pretty high bar and a daunting task of the role of marketing, because as we set out, you know, our targets in 2011, we're not going to get there without marketing. I think that's going to become clear to the listeners here when I talk through the story. You know, back, and I kind of tell you where I come in, a year ago, back in May 2010, we really had very little in terms of dedicated marketing to support the business. And that's where I came in. I joined Bizzo from SuccessFactors, as you mentioned. And I joined to really build the marketing engine here at the company.
Okay, and you've been there for about a year?
Yeah, coming up on the first year.
Okay, fantastic. And so kind of give us a description of all the areas that you're responsible for. Is it just the demand generation engine? I mean, do you also have PR? Do you have communications? I mean, kind of how does that blend at Bizzo right now?
Yeah, it's really end-to-end. So everything from, marketing strategy, kind of based on where we think the business is going to come from, helping to figure out where are we going to focus the marketing dollars, from product marketing, everything from helping to define the messaging and the Bizzo story and helping to step back and modularize and package the platform to everything that we would know, from the traditional demand gen side, really managing the full mix, including PR and AR.
Okay, so Dave, did you have a background in demand generation and using demand generation tools prior to joining Bizzo?
I do, but my core background, in the very earliest days, I actually started in sales, which, as kind of looking in hindsight, has really served me super well, as I've kind of gone deeper and further in my whole marketing journey. Then I had, as we all do, we kind of go through, the path that we follow, however that happens, and it led me into product marketing. So my deepest pockets really for many years in product marketing. And then, gradually took on bigger and bigger roles where being responsible for demand gen as well. In my last role, at SuccessFactors, I was head of global product marketing. So I wasn't responsible for demand gen there, but I was able, you're partnering super close with counterparts on the marketing side. Yeah, so I got super close to kind of how they were building a real demand gen machine on a global basis. And that company was targeting, multiple segments, small biz up to the largest of enterprise and cross industries and around the globe. So a non-trivial challenge to kind of build a demand engine to support that the sales that company was looking for.
Absolutely. And I got to tell you, I'm fascinated when I take a look at the backgrounds of executives especially who are now running demand generation practices in their organizations and who are actually responsible for a revenue number. So Dave mentioned he's got a background in sales and also in product marketing and how closely those things align. Just another data point, I'm on a 15-city speaking tour right now. That's where I met Dave. He was a case study in one of the cities. And I'm asking the audiences every time I go into town about their backgrounds. And it's been fascinating. I'll ask people how many people in the audience have a background in sales, operations, or finance. And we're seeing close to 40-50% people having additional things besides marketing in their backgrounds, probably even closer to 60%, which I think is a great precursor to come into demand generation. So when you think about your sales background, Dave, how do you think that has enabled you to be a better marketer?
I think it's been absolutely, instrumental in me kind of moving along in that curve really fast. I think, I started, interestingly enough, my first career in sales was really in and around Japan. I spent my first few years working in Japan, Tokyo and Osaka, and then working in New York City for Japanese companies, but in sales. So that was quite a challenge with the language and trying to figure out how to meet quota at the same time. And I think looking back, what it's given me, just blocking and tackling a healthy dose of understanding and empathy for kind of what an on-the-ground sales rep is faced with on a daily basis to build their pipeline and hit quota, and then, it's never over. You hit the next quarter, and you're kind of doing it again. I think it's given me, and especially when we drill down on kind of what's happening here at Bizzo, given me a real good in-the-weeds understanding of kind of the end-to-end lead management process, opportunity deal tracking process from a sales perspective. And, I guess I'd say it gives me that acute awareness of the risk of the chasm or divide that can be created between sales and marketing. As we all know, sometimes there's many organizations where marketing can dangerously fall into that trap of kind of in the ivory tower doing lots of things that they think are exciting, but very disconnected from the goals, how the sales team and the business is being measured, right? So I think that's always kept me really close to kind of the sales metrics and making sure that the marketing team is aligned with those.
I couldn't agree more. I myself have also a background in sales for many years, and so when I began demand generation, it just made sense to me. And so we often work with marketers, and one of the very first things I tell them is that if you don't know sales, you need to get involved with your sales organizations and really understand what their world is like, because really they're our ultimate customer. because our job is to produce high-quality leads and then to help accelerate those leads through the funnel. And if you don't understand enough about that environment, I think you're going to have a really big challenge there. I always like to write down kind of fun phrases as people kind of talk. And one of the things that I heard you talk about is what I call quarters and quotas, and really how to work around that mindset of quarters and quotas. That's a very, very different thing for the typical marketer to work around. So I thought that was a really great concept. Well, the title of today's show is really around building a demand generation engine from scratch. So clearly the first thing that Bizzo did was hire you, and then how did you build it from there? What was the next step, Dave?
So they got that right.
We got that perfectly right, absolutely.
That's right.
So then what happened?
So going back in time, you know, about a year ago, I kind of mentioned the company had grown with very little marketing support. So kind of what does that really mean? It's kind of saying that all that growth the company had experienced was really on the shoulders of just direct sales outreach and business development outreach. And we're, you know, we have multiple audiences that were that are really important to our business, and I won't kind of drill down into that detail. But it was really key to kind of penetrate further into those audiences, whether from the customer side or the partner side. It was acutely clear to our CEO and probably even the board that we weren't going to, as we started to look toward, you know, knocking it out in 2010 and beyond, wasn't going to be able to scale the business without marketing. So that's kind of, that was the context for which I was hired and came in to build. So I came in to build the marketing engine, if you will, but really what we're trying to do is build a scalable revenue engine.
Let me ask you one thing before we kind of get into that, because I'm just so fascinated, because you're, clearly the CEO and the board saw a need to bring in marketing. Were they thinking traditional marketing, or were they kind of already on board with the whole idea of demand generation? I mean, kind of what were their thoughts there?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm fortunate in that way. I think, you know, my CEO has a product background, marketing background. The folks on the board are very engaged in the business. So they were very much thinking marketing in terms of, you know, revenue scalability, you know.
Absolutely right.
That's what it was going to be about. Sure that we wanted to create, you know, for a relatively small company, to create awareness, to create, make us be perceived much bigger than we are, and a lot of things that traditional marketing does. But it was about how are we going to help, you know, the sales team meet their numbers.
And I got to tell you, again, I love your phrase, revenue scalability. And again, kudos to the CEO of your organization and also to the board for recognizing that revenue scalability is not always just hiring another headcount over in sales, but marketing can make a huge impact on that. So, again, I love that phrase, revenue scalability. So, all right, so you have a really smart CEO and a really great board. They hired you, and you come in, and you begin to take a look at what are you going to have to do to build this machine.
Yep, exactly. I think one of the first things is probably looking back, probably the single, I can't say smartest thing that we did, or the temptation was to like, oh my God, you know, here I am, great opportunity, great company, I'm in this role that can have a lot of impact, to dive deep in that demand gen and start. I got to start pumping out leads. That's what I was hired for, right? What I did instead, you know, this was a young company without someone like kind of really looking at the products and packaging and messaging and really looking at the story. All the things that you need to have that whole what we'll call the content and messaging house in order to really start to unleash on the demand gen side. And that was kind of my perspective coming in. So I allowed us the time of at least 2 or 3 months when I first joined to really spend time, put our product marketing hats on, and work methodically through it. I kind of talked about product packaging and refining and expanding our messaging platform, kind of really me getting closer to business, you know, because what value am I going to add, you know, if I don't really understand kind of who we're targeting and who we're trying to talk to, understand our audiences, all that, you know, marketing 101.
Very smart. Very, very, very smart.
And then, blow out all the collateral, you know, blow out the sales tools we're going to need. And, of course, you only can create so much in a period of time, so focus on what you think is going to be the golden tool set.
Yep.
And then start building out, you know, the offers, the thought leadership pieces, the white papers, getting some video out the door, things that were going to be critical when we started to raise the volume from a demand gen perspective,
absolutely,
which we did in the fall.
And we talk a lot about, you know, when you're, if you're going to have a, if you're going to be a true revenue marketer, you know, content is king. You've got to have it. It's got to, and you've got to have the great messaging. So, and it seems to me, Dave, that, you know, 2 to 3 months to kind of get what you call that golden tool set in place, that's actually pretty fast. But again, that's one of the great things about working for a smaller organization is that you can move at a much faster speed. So it took 2 to 3 months and took a very methodical approach to take a look at the content, the messaging, the golden tool set. And then from there, where'd you go?
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned something, too, kind of strikes me. There is that balance, right? You could spend 6 months. I mean, some companies that have lots of resources can spend a whole year going through a repositioning exercise, right?
Yeah.
But you don't have that luxury. You do want to – you're never going to perfect it. And the truth is you're never going to know how good the story is until you start telling it. So I wanted to get a complete thought and start bringing it to market, right?
Yep.
So that's what we did. In the fall, you know, our goal in September was really to unleash – you know, the full mix, almost in a chaotic, rapid type of way. I guess what we wanted to do was to figure out which channels, which, you know, if we're starting to do some media buys, if you start to leverage the full mix, start ramping PR, figure out what's working for us, what's going to work for us, where should we spend money. So my goal was to do a lot, especially for a small company that hadn't spent a lot in the past and invested a lot of energy. I want to kind of turn full throttle fast so we can kind of, you know, do the old learn and fail quickly so that we'd enter 2011.
Yeah.
We'd have a real clear point of view in 2011, which, you know, here I am in 2011, knowing where we're going to get the most benefit as we invest marketing dollars.
I got to tell you, I love that approach, and I wish we could get more marketers to take that approach. And again, that's for everyone that's listening to the show. I think as marketers, we just don't experiment enough. And what a great example! You call it your unleash the full mix and kind of a chaotic, you know, and see what's going to work and learn and fail quickly. I love that approach, and I highly recommend it to more marketers. And yet, I see a lot of marketers are kind of scared to do that. So kudos, Dave, for unleashing that. And I think it made a lot of sense for where you guys were. You know, unleash the stuff, see what works, see what doesn't work. So when you get into 2011, you'll have something that makes more sense.
Yeah, and a key, you know, it's easier said than done, that's for sure. And
yeah.
I did not want to, one main goal, you know, I guess I have to back up just a little bit. There's no way I would have felt comfortable unleashing the mix, as we're saying here, excuse me, without getting a marketing platform in place.
Yeah.
And that we kind of, while we're getting the messaging house in order, in parallel, I had to... And it was some good internal debate, you know, at this evolution in the company's life. Do you bring in a marketing platform to help scale, you know, what we're going to try to do in the marketing? And which comes first? You start trying to scale, and then you bring in the platform. But, again, as you mentioned, we're relatively small and nimble, so I got buy-in and budget, and we spent the summer also going through due diligence to pick a marketing platform and did end up going with Marketo squarely based on kind of what we – you know, requirements today and kind of where we were looking to go, you know, tomorrow. And the goal, black and white goal, was bring that system live by after Labor Day so that by early September we would have, you know, kind of what I think of as kind of the catcher's mitt of all things marketing, have that marketing platform in place. And without that, I don't think, you know, our small team, I have 2.5 people in marketing, so there's no way we were going to be able to unleash anything. Manually ad hoc basis. So the platform was key to kind of do it.
I kudos to you guys, and that's the reason I wanted you on the show. I think, again, that is so smart to do. I think a lot of times when people buy a marketing automation system, they think they're going to be at the end game quickly, and it continues to be an evolution, a very quick evolution. So, again, by unleashing, you know, the full mix when you did, again, with the 2.5 people that you got, and choosing Marketo and going with that platform and just getting up and running on it. And so what was that experience like from a learning perspective? So you bought Marketo, you deployed it, sometime in September, and so you had a lot of moving parts right here. So what did you learn about how you could use marketing automation or how you could use Marketo to help you even get to where you wanted to faster? And was it a good decision for you guys to go ahead and do it when you did it?
Yeah, I think we kind of brought it live in early September, but it definitely was just the beginning. I mean, we started to the goal was to start pumping campaigns through it to have, you know, as we create landing pages and all the, you know, all the blocking and tackling things that you would use, you know, as a baseline and leveraging a system like that. So we have a common way of tracking programs across the mix and be able to then, through the integration with our, you know, we're using Salesforce on the CRM side, being able to track that into a pipeline so that we'd see, have visibility into kind of what was actually moving the needle. So that was a goal. Beginning, let's at least from a data perspective and from a program tracking and execution have a common ground. But it was just the beginning. As we proceeded through the fall, we're pumping campaigns through the system. We quickly, you know, here I am. I'm like, oh, great. Leads are coming. And I'm starting to feel good. But I quickly had that pit in my stomach, as I've described to some here at the company, where I'm like, you know what? Great. We're starting to spend money. We're getting leads. But I was really, you know, you kind of wake up in the middle of the night, well, a little dramatized here, but you're like, these leads are just going to march off a cliff if I don't spend more time with sales working out our processes, you know, our lead management end-to-end processes. And as a young company, we didn't have any baggage of any bad process, but we had no benefit of really any process. The same way we're maturing marketing at the organization, our sales team was growing fast, and they were, you know, even a short year and a half ago, they had a few salespeople. You didn't need much process. So they were just getting their act together. So getting the system in place really drove us, you know, sitting down with sales, you know, over a few-week period and really reinforced by CEO that this was probably at the time one of the most important things we could be doing to figure this out, to us to sweat the details of, like, you know, I guess very tactically, you know, how are you going to define lead status? You know, as we're passing over leads, you know, what are the different statuses? What's protocol for follow-up? Take another look at pipeline stages and you know, I think our sales team probably doing what a lot of early companies do. They're only starting to enter information into a CRM when something reaches kind of, for us in our world, when an RFP came in, that's when they entered it in the system. And that's really hard when you're starting to spend money on marketing programs, because you get no early visibility into what's entering the pipeline, those early planning discussions,
right,
if you will.
That's right.
So a lot, there were probably like, you know, a dozen light bulbs that went off, things that we had to kind of, not fix, but start building with sales in those early days.
And I like,
and, you know,
and
we're
again,
still kind of in those early days.
Yeah, and that's what I tell people. You don't know what you don't know when you start this. You really don't. You can't anticipate it. But I love, again, the analogy of the light bulbs going off, and I think that's exactly it. So you guys use Salesforce, Dave?
Yeah, we do.
Salesforce.com? Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
So you have a good integration between Marketo and Salesforce.com?
Yeah, super tight.
Okay, and I think that's one of the things that you really do need to have. And again, that's where you kind of get around to, you know, as a marketer, being able to have those discussions with sales. And you said it right. It's not that you were doing, you know, anything wrong, but now you just had to sit down with sales and just figure this whole thing out, everything from lead status to protocol for follow-up to the stages. And again, what a unique opportunity to have sales and marketing kind of working together in an environment to really create an end-to-end process from name all the way to a piece of closed business. I think that's pretty unique.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. You don't often get kind of like a white canvas and kind of be able to build it right the first time, and that's what we're hoping to do. I'm sure we're still making mistakes along the way.
Okay.
So that, I think, process was kind of one of those, you know, in terms of implementing the system, building that process behind the scenes along the way and figuring that out. And then,
let me ask you this, Dave, on process before we move forward. So did you guys anticipate that you'd have to do this much process work, or is it something that you just kind of wanted to get to, or kind of what were your thoughts around process when you began to roll out Marketo?
It's a really good question. If I had the others on my team, we had a lot of debate even back in the summer before we rolled out the system where we knew it. We knew we were lacking in process and protocol and diligence, and we just needed to tighten things up. But until we started, I kind of landed on this philosophy. Until we started really creating a problem, as a small, fast-growing company, it just wasn't worth me creating the distraction to try to intellectually figure it out. So I kind of held back. I held back until it became somewhat of a problem. And I kind of had to do my part, start creating and signing some leads, and then it becomes something we should talk about. So I kind of knew it was coming. Didn't know how easy or hard it would be to work through it. And I think here again, executive sponsorship, having my CEO actually engaged in some of these early discussions and reinforcing, not I have a super good partnership with my counterpart, head of sales, but it certainly helped having my CEO kind of say, like, this is absolutely the most important thing we got to figure out right now. And I think it helped rise it up on you know, my counterpart's priority list.
Again, I love the, let's start the problem so we can help define it. I just have never thought about it quite in those terms, but you're exactly right. But I will say this. I think it takes a lot of leadership and a lot of maturity to say, I'm going to create the problem that I know that we're going to have so that we can have discussions around it. So, I'm just really impressed with that. Well, it's clear as we think about what you guys have done and how quickly you got out of the blocks that you guys have come very far, very fast. What were some of your initial expectations or goals for this project?
You know, I think you could kind of tell from the early parts of the story, I held off trying to set some major quantitative goals like in those first 4 or 5 months, right? The major goal was to kind of get a system in place, get a process in place, start learning what's kind of working and not working. But that's changing really quickly, you know, and I could think about the slides as I helped prepare some board slides, you know, end of 2010, kind of what the content looked like as we're trying to update the board on our progress from a marketing perspective. It looks dramatically different than the exercise I went through a couple weeks ago. And it has to do with kind of the way I'm framing my goals are changing very quickly. And it's now we're in position to start measuring ourselves on pipeline contribution and revenue contribution and things like that.
And again, I could not agree more. So I was recently on a conversation and with actually a prospect, and they said, we want to have some goals for like the first 3 to 6 months, and you know, what kind of goals, and you know, how can we measure pipeline contribution and those kinds of things. And Dave, I told them the same thing that you said. I said, you know, you really need to hold off at least for the first 4 to 5 months. You need to get the system in place. You need to get some core foundational processes in place. You need to see what works, but most importantly, see what does not work and build a baseline, right? Because when you begin with marketing automation, you don't have a baseline because you've never done this stuff before. So really building that baseline. And then once you have a baseline, then you can come in and start making changes and kind of, in my mind, begin morphing too, more toward that revenue marketing journey. And everybody takes a different amount of time on kind of that initial area, but I think that's a great lesson learned. You know, don't make any huge promises unless you have something very unique going on, you know, that you can make some kind of significant contribution to revenue. But I think a lot of companies tend to think that, I buy the marketing automation, we'll get to revenue, you know what, next week. But it does take a little bit more time than that.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, and I know for the listeners here, let me try to – I'll surface some – like in the weeds nuggets. I don't know if they're golden nuggets, but they're nuggets.
Okay.
In these early days, because it's all about data. Like, it's really hard to kind of steer the marketing ship until you have a lot of data. So once, and it's super exciting that we do see those early marketing source deals dropping, and I see, you know, a really nice growing percentage of our pipeline that market either marketing sourced or influenced. But until you have lots of data, it's hard to kind of correlate back to say, oh, great, I'm sourcing all that through paid search or display. Let me start fueling those areas. So you're looking for, you know, kind of what I call the progress metrics. So even last fall, we were looking really carefully at a few metrics, and I could just throw some of them up and kind of why, when I looked at this data on a weekly basis, kind of what I was looking to learn. Top, obviously, super top of funnel kind of stuff, but leads, you know, end of the day, am I bringing – you know, new names into my marketing database? Am I generating new leads? The overall health of our house database, because obviously as we're starting to use email nurturing and making sure that you don't have folks unsubscribing, and you know, are we moving in a good direction and at what rate in building our house database? So kind of top funnel type of stuff, but that's kind of where you start. Then, you know, a couple of things with marketing qualified leads. And marketing qualified, it's something you're almost defining, because it's implied by your lead scoring. So we did early on, we put some lead scoring in place in our system in Marketo. And as we learn, we've kind of been massaging that. But, you know, a marketing qualified lead is anything that's hitting a scoring threshold based on parameters, you know, behavioral or demographic parameters we're setting in our system are being assigned out based, in our case, on territory. We'll be assigning out to the right rep. So there we want to see, okay, we're getting in the top, you know, let's say we're getting, for easy math, 1,000 leads a month into the top of the funnel. How many of those are we preparing and making sales ready on a weekly basis? And is that number growing over the time? Now, early on, you might see you can make yourself feel good and have that lead scoring be really lenient, and you can have 1,000 of 1,000 go through and be assigned out to sales, and you feel pretty good about yourself. And that's where you need to stay in really close dialogue with, you know, with the field rep and say, what are you thinking of these leads coming over? You know, the earliest indicator is the rep making the phone call. So get a sense early and then start refining your lead scoring so that you can start increasing the percentage of leads that are getting sent over that are deemed, you know, ready to call.
So, Dave, when you guys did your initial lead scoring, did you guys actually involve sales in that conversation?
We did. I literally had, you know, that dedicated, you know, time on the calendar. We all got and talked about it. This is kind of almost another case where we kind of concluded we're almost pre-intellectualizing or intellectualizing it prematurely. We just didn't know, and it seemed arbitrary as we were trying to play weighting the different activity. So we just kind of said, we put our finger in the air and said, let's start here and just start to gauge what's coming through. And here, I took that same let's get chaotic and noisy. I erred on having more data rolling through the system to kind of test the full process than being overly conservative and holding back leads early on, but quickly had to kind of start reining that in so we didn't have lots of, you don't want to kill sales productivity by having, you know, non-ready leads flowing over.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yep.
So some early nuggets. You talked a little bit about, how important data was and making sure that, you know, the data and the health of the database was there. Some early things that you looked at were MQLs and, you know, were the sales ready leads growing on a weekly basis? What else did you look at early in those early days?
We looked, and this I think is probably the most important, given all the process work, we looked at assigned leads, so something that was deemed marketing qualified and assigned over to a rep. What did that pool look like in terms of open status? So it took a really good look at were leads staying open? Were they being followed up on? And what it did, it creates a really interesting dialogue with sales, because you may have this growing pool of open leads, and what is it? It can mean a couple things. It can mean that the reps are losing confidence in the quality of your leads and they're just not paying much attention, and that's not good. Or it could mean, and I think this was more the case, as we saw some of this balloon early on, a capacity issue where, you know, we have, just we're small, we don't yet have we're not structured to have an inside team yet, and we're looking to bring that on. So the same reps that are working late-stage activity are the same ones that are getting assigned leads. And when a rep gets caught with lots of late-stage activity, they're going to tend to prioritize that activity.
Yep.
So that is a very positive discussion to bring to sales and executive team to say, you know what, I think we got to ramp, get this inside team in house, or get more feet on the street. It's a good problem to have. But
so you guys have
looking
an inside,
at that metric helped.
Do you guys have an inside team that kind of pre-qualifies before it passes over to the sales reps?
We don't yet, and it kind of speaks to kind of our maturity. We're we just started to build out in a big way, putting more kind of outside reps on the street.
Uh-huh.
And now we're looking, especially given the marketing machine we're creating, that there's a need. So we're looking actually, you know, here and now, we're in process of bringing in an inside team.
Okay, excellent. I did an interview with Sally Lowry of Bronto Software. It was late last year. I'll send you the link to that, but I'll also send you an introduction to Sally. She has a phenomenal inside telequalifying team that she built. And so she'd be a great person to go to for some additional lessons.
That would be
great. She's just one of my very favorite revenue marketers. Okay. So, you know, in these early nuggets, and we have talked a little bit about the process, I mean, you know, getting Marketo in, getting it up and running and functional, and getting it integrated with Salesforce.com, pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah, from the getting the system in place perspective,
mm-hmm.
that was, you know, that exceeded my expectations kind of every step of the way. That was not bogging us down. I think getting that baseline in place, you know, was fairly, I would get light touch from my end. Like, I was super impressed with how easy it was to kind of get going. It's this incremental learning and really getting the system to support what you're trying to accomplish. That's a combination of this, you know, process and the system,
okay,
and kind of knowing what you're setting out to do.
Okay. So, and again, my point is, quite often it's really not about the technology. Really, the effort to get to revenue has a lot more to do with the people and the process part of the equation versus just the technology part of the equation. And so as I kind of look at your case study, I see that, you know, stage one for you is, you know, once you've selected the marketing automation system and once it was just deployed and, you know, technically it worked, you know, stage one is really creating a baseline. You know, what do we know, what do we don't know, and how can we then really operationalize everything to get to our revenue result? And you had also mentioned that, and again, I thought this was fantastic, create a problem so that you can then have a conversation rather than intellectualizing a problem and say to salespeople, oh, let's pretend, right? So clearly,
yeah,
stage two for you really was taking a look at and mapping out some of the key processes. And we talked a little bit about those key processes, but tell me a little bit more about your approach around improving processes.
Well, now with this, you know, several months behind us, it's, you know, it's kind of exciting. We get to move to that next level. You kind of have your baseline, have a baseline process which everyone understands. We have lots of, you know, leads going through the system, and we have a pretty good, we've now made, I call it, you know, again, the catcher's mitt. We have Marketo as our catcher's mitt. So from we can now let the system, you know, we can almost step back from process and say, okay, well, now we have this great, super sophisticated system. How do we help scale the way we would think about process? For example, I have a very small marketing team. To do everything we want to do, traditionally, I would need to be starting to hire two or three or four more people, and, you know, we're not, you know, positioned to start ramping marketing at that rate. What we're doing now is, I call it graduating to some very sophisticated email nurturing and nurturing of our marketing funnel, where we're taking all the content we created and that we continue to create, all the different our understanding of the different audiences we're trying to reach, and we're creating, you know, automated kind of drip campaigns or triggered based on behavior, so that when we engage with when a new lead enters top of funnel, based on kind of where they're starting and the road that they travel in engaging with us and our content, we will then communicate automatically with them. And it's been super powerful. It's the only way I think we've been able to come so far so quickly, I think, is that we started to do that probably in November, December. And I think in January we started to really refine by audience. We have separate workflows that are by, you know, distinct, two or three distinct audiences. And that's helping since we don't have an inside sales team. I kind of call that for now, that is our Band-Aid inside sales team. It's helping to kind of further prepare, further help folks self-qualify, self-select in to engage with us in a pretty dramatic way.
So I want to make a comment about that, and then I want some more specifics on that, because
sure,
I agree with you. I think that this ability to segment is very, very powerful. And again, when I take a look at the way marketers in general use marketing automation in general, unfortunately, they kind of use it as a glorified email system, when the power really is in graduating to very sophisticated nurturing. And even Jim Lenskold, who wrote the book Marketing ROI, and who was actually speaking today, both the day that Dave and I spoke at the Marketo Revenue Rockstar Roadshow, says that the number one thing that you can do to improve marketing performance is to target your audience. So tell me some more about kind of how you guys went from general nurturing to this more specific nurturing, and give me a couple of, you know, vivid examples.
Sure. I think blocking and tackling, you have different offers, and you've started to kind of unleash them. They're on your website. Just starting, you know, we're doing what a lot of marketers are doing. We're working with different media partners, doing third-party email blasts. We're doing display through our own network and elsewhere. We're learning which offers work in what circumstances and where folks are resonating, which were resonating and engaging better than others. So I think it's getting a sense of your content, and not just the content asset itself, the positioning of that content. So looking, you know, blocking and tackling, right? It's which subject lines are working best, which landing pages are working best. So you're starting to learn all that as you kind of turn on the system and start running campaigns through it generically. As you learn that, then you start to kind of understand the role an offer, a content piece can play in helping to drive someone down the funnel. So as you start to understand your pool of assets and you get smarter on that and you get smarter on positioning those assets and potentially amending or revising those assets, extending them, you then position yourself to kind of go on a whiteboard, which is what we did, and start thinking through, in an ideal world, if you had never heard of Bizzo before, you never heard of business audience marketing, how would I want someone to go through that journey and which assets would I deploy at what time to do that? And you're in a better position to kind of have a really good point of view of how you architect that, having a few months under your belt of working with putting these assets, if you will, in play. Does that make sense?
So it does. It does. And so for example, you said you now have workflows by audience. So how many workflows do you have right now?
We have two primary, but I would say we kind of have like a three total. So we're targeting marketers. We're trying to reach marketers, and marketers that are, I won't get into it, but, you know, that fit probably a certain profile. It's not every marketer on the planet that we would be relevant for today, but there's probably a good subset, so we're trying to attack that group of marketers. Ad agencies, which support the marketer. So they're very similar, yet a little different, so you'd still want to try to message to them a little different, right? Deploy somewhat different assets. They're driven a little differently. And then we have, you know, completely different side of the equation in our ecosystem. And again, without bogging folks on the call here with lots of detail, publishers, which are the business publishers that provide the raw ingredients that allow us the data to do what we do. So we have a completely separate branch for publishers and marketers and a slightly revised branch for agencies.
So does that mean that your messaging, your graphics, your offers vary based on the audience that you're talking to?
Yes, especially for publisher and marketer, because they're very, extremely different. The value prop that we provide those audiences is very different, so you're telling a different story. Now, the marketer and the agency is by and large the same story, but if you can identify early in the funnel that it's in-house marketer versus an agency, you would choose to deploy, you know, a different message potentially. So we have slight revisions of that.
And you know, that's going to be my next question, because people always say, oh, yeah, I understand the value of segmentation, just how do I get it done? So how do you guys go about finding out if you're a marketer, an ad agency, or a publisher?
Okay, so we're getting better at it, but something as simple as we're now deploying, you know, like everyone, you're kind of hesitant when you're building out forms to ask too much information, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to have a very innocent built into every form. Are you an in-house marketer? Are you an ad agency? Or are you a publisher? So we're going to try to capture when people
are engaged.
Aren't
you just asking them?
Yeah, like it's funny, huh? But we hesitated to date, and then we realized, because we've experimented a little bit, that there's nothing wrong with it. Everyone's, you know, people assume these days, especially our target audience, that that's going to help you get them more quickly to the content they're looking for. But we're also, based on kind of how they which program or channel we're sourcing that lead, we can take an educated guess who they might be.
And can I ask you a question? How are you asking that? Is it just like a little thing that says, are you a, and then check the one that applies? I mean, how are you asking the question?
We're dropping this. I don't want to make it up on the fly, only in that because we're literally just deploying it this week. We kind of have
awesome.
Scoped it, and we've been kind of in trepidation, but we're going to deploy it.
It's going to be
in that short form. We're just going to add one more.
Love it.
One more
Love
ad
it.
On the short form.
Love it. Yeah. And how many fields on your short form?
Today we probably have, let's say five or six or half a dozen, something like that.
Okay. All right. Excellent. You know, I just love your sense of experimentation. I think it's awesome, and I think it's the right attitude to have, clearly. So you were brought in to really make sure that marketing was contributing to revenue. How would you say that having Marketo as a foundational element has helped you get there?
Well, I honestly don't know how it would be a bear to I spend more time trying to. I don't think we'd be able to be as ambitious in the programs that we're running. So we probably just wouldn't be able to do as much in a shorter period of time. And then on the other end of the gamut, I don't know if it would take too much time for me to get visibility into the impact. I'd spend probably more time tracking down data and munging data. So because of the integration between Marketo and Salesforce, it allows me. You know, it's still a learning game of setting up the right reports. Is it telling it what you're trying to tell it? You're seeing some things that look weird in these reports, so you go back and you kind of refine them. Sometimes when you look at data coming out of some, you know, opportunity pipeline, which opportunities were influenced by a marketing program, and it just looks weird. You're like, well, maybe we have a breakdown in process, or there's something wrong with the data. So you refine it over time. But now we've reached the point that we have a few reports we look at every week. Someone on my team is actually working just popping open five automated reports, summarizing this in a Google Doc share, and sending it to me and my CEO and our head of sales. So we're kind of tracking, we're sharing this progress metrics, if you will. And then now on a quarterly basis, pretty easily we're able to get to, I talked about the top funnel type of metrics, but we're now tracking opportunity marketing contribution to pipeline. So we're tracking both number and deal value of opportunities, and we're able to get pretty ready visibility to that. And
so what kind of metrics can you share with us? What kind of actual improvements or what kind of numbers can you actually share with us?
Excuse me. You know, it's the early days, so it's hard for me to kind of say, okay, we're now impacting 20% of the pipeline. But I'll say this, like I go back to January and I saw maybe half a dozen or a dozen or that are in pipeline. Now I go and it looks like something like 20, 25% of opportunities were sourced through a marketing program. The disclaimer is I just don't know the quality of those yet because it's a little early.
Right.
So time will tell and we do have, as I had to prepare our end of quarter numbers, I see a nice growing list of deals that were sourced through marketing, closed business. So we are now impacting revenue.
How long is your sales cycle, your average sales cycle?
It could be pretty short. It's not long because we're not dealing with a complex, software implementation or something that might take a very long period of time. But it could be 30, 60, 90 days.
Okay.
So some conversations can go, 90, 180 days type of thing, but usually it's within quarter. It's a within quarter decision.
Okay, perfect.
Which
and
helps us get data more quickly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But even with that, I mean, the fact that you took Q4 of last year just to kind of get a baseline in place so that you were ready to kind of rock and roll in January, I mean, it's just still early April right now, and with, even a 90-day sales cycle, you're right. You're tracking. You're doing what you call progress metrics, which I think is excellent. And so you were saying that you're seeing a nice list of opportunities growing that are attributed to marketing. Are you looking at any other kind of progress metrics that are kind of interesting?
We're looking at things like and we're trying to get better at it. But you have, we're talking about marketing qualified, but we're trying to get it how many sales qualified leads. And that's going to be just a really nice early indicator of our ability to impact pipeline. Like how many leads are converting into an opportunity or being accepted by sales and qualified, and they might fall off the opportunity list fast, so we're not getting good visibility. But something that they make a phone call and they're like, "Yep, this is someone we should be speaking to." They might not be an opportunity today because there's no business in the next 6 months, but this is someone that was a fit, right?
Absolutely.
So that's a really good metric, and that's one we're gonna probably spend a lot more work on. You know, with the sales team and understanding how we can programmatically make sure everyone is kind of, again, interpreting lead status in the right way and working, taking action in the system so that we can kind of record that moment.
Absolutely. And again, you know, again, that's why, again, it's so important to have a baseline and to know where you are and where you want to go, because you have to start tracking and measuring the right kinds of things. And so as the data comes in and you're able to do that analysis and you've got that, you know, the baseline from that, then you can not only say, here's where we are, but you can also then start providing a real forecast to the organization for how and where you're going to be able to contribute. So I have two final questions, and one is, if you were talking to a brand new marketer who says, you know, kind of looking at marketing automation, you know, we clearly see that marketing needs to be doing more around revenue. What are the top three pieces of advice you might give to a marketer like that?
What are the top three tidbits, huh?
Yeah, the top three.
Yeah.
Fill down the million that you've got and make it just three.
That's right. You know, I think first of all would be to think big. I think if you aim, I think this is something I kind of, it's a punchline I brought up in the conference a couple weeks ago, but aim high, you know, in your own role and day to day of kind of what you think your contribution can be. You know, if you're talking about a new marketing leader, that, you know, this fictitious person you're describing, or if it's someone who's just in a, you know, a functional role within marketing, if you think that you're setting out to generate a lot of leads or create some awareness or get some media hits or whatever wherever you're sitting in marketing, or to kick out a lot of data sheets, and you're going to create a lot of data sheets and that's your goal, that's probably what you'll do. And you'll probably end up creating some value downstream. But if you kind of from the get-go set your, you know, sights high on the potential of what marketing can do, what it can mean to the business, you start measuring not only on a quarterly basis, but you start to help prioritize your day. Because I think all this comes down to, like, we can all get so busy. I mean, you just open your email and half your day can get sucked away. And you'll say, well, did I impact revenue answering all that email or doing that data sheet or spending that extra 10 hours on that PowerPoint slide, right? So I think you start thinking more judiciously around how you spend your time. So I guess
I love this question. I love it. If you were just sitting there every day and said, is what I'm doing right now impacting revenue versus, because you're right, I call marketing the black hole of no return on time.
Because you
can get sucked down so many paths when it comes to marketing because it's such a broad category. So I love that piece of advice. So that'd be number one. Okay. What's number two?
Number two, I'd say don't skip, I don't know, it's probably the wrong way to say it. Don't skip to the good stuff. You know, it is a little bit more kind of, call it the sexy stuff of like where you are creating leads and you're passing off the sales. And it is, in the marketing world, I think it's a lot easier to measure, at least, that we're creating leads and you can count them, you know, and you want to go start jumping into that demand gen activity. I think it would be, to be successful, don't skip the upfront, get your messaging house in order. I think that's going to set you up for success. And the closer you can get to that, you know, especially given that, you know, my background, you know, coming from the product marketing perspective, because I spent so much time kind of in those shoes specifically, there's a lot of folks in demand gen that they kind of just want to give me the message, give me the data sheet, and I'm going to start cranking the machine. The best folks I've seen in demand gen that are the strongest are the ones that actually really start, really understand, embrace the story, and can actually add a lot of value in refining what's being passed over, from example, product marketing. So get close to the story and the message and the audience. Like, who are you sending these as you crank the engine, where are these programs going? And do you understand that audience? I think that's going to serve you well. And finally, it's, you know, back to my, you know, the sales experience, I guess, but it's, you know, understand, end of the day, you're trying to serve the needs of the business, and probably that's serving the sales organization first and foremost to help support growing pipeline and things like that. Do you really understand what it's like to go pitch your product, you know, in a meeting with a customer? You know, have you been in a meeting with a customer or a prospect, right? Do you understand kind of how a salesperson is spending their time, and what's in a sales cycle? Do you understand what's really moving the needle in a sales cycle? And is it the 5 data sheets, or is it something else, right? So I think is it the leads, you know, let's put the demand gen purely on. As you send leads over, and if you have to be that rep following up on 10 leads that just hit their queue, you know, what's it like to follow up on those 10 leads? Like, are they, you know, how ready are those leads? And I think it serves you well to have to be on some of those calls to kind of help reinforce what you might need to rejigger or refine from a targeting perspective in your programs. So there's the magic three. Debbie?
I'm here.
Oh, you are there. Okay. So those are...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm here. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I disconnected myself earlier, but I hopped right back in, so I apologize for that.
Oh, no problem.
So, but anyway.
No problem. Wrapped up the top of mind.
I was definitely gone for a second there. So I think those are, again, great 3 pieces of advice. And so I want to thank you so much for your time today. Really, really enjoyed talking to you. I learned so much today, and also helped solidify some thoughts that I have in my mind as I go out and I talk to marketers. And I really love the story of, let's get the foundation first and find out what we don't know, and then you can move so quickly from there. So thank you so much for your time today, David. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Thanks for having me. It was great being here.